Blog Talk Radio.
Some of the best fights we've had in this quarter of a century here.
Well, it was definitely the biggest event we've had ever as far as pay-per-view is concerned. The Floyd Mayweather, Saul Canelo Alvarez fight did become the highest pay-per-view, grossing pay-per-view of all time, eclipsing the record of Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather, broke records in Mexico. So overall, it was a tremendous event for boxing. We didn't get a tremendous fight. We got a tremendous display of sublime skills from Floyd Mayweather. But overall, it was, again, a tremendous event financially for boxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, the whole card was entertaining except for the main event, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Floyd, yeah, it wasn't a fight at all.
A lot of people, you know, didn't find, even though it was, a tighter contested fight, a lot of people didn't find entertainment value in the Carlos Molina-Ish Smith fight. And I knew the two styles would kind of cancel each other out in a sense that it wouldn't be the most entertaining fight. Both guys are solid and tough to knock out as well. The entertainment factor in the Mayweather fight, there wasn't drama. There was entertainment. If you like pure boxing, if you're a pure boxing fan, hit and not get hit, then there was a spectacle to behold in the main event because he completely declawed Alvarez. Alvarez was 15 pounds heavier that night. And you know, it's funny because in retrospect, everyone's saying Alvarez should have been more aggressive. But when he tried to get more aggressive, he suffered more punishment and was blooded. So to me, it looked like Alvarez was in awe, but not in awe of the moment, not necessarily in awe of Floyd Mayweather, the fighter, but in awe of Floyd Mayweather, the puzzle that was presented. There were times you could visibly see Canelo get frustrated. He actually did not know what to do. Nacho Berenstein didn't think he came to the ring with a great strategy, number one. He think that was one of his great mistakes, and he doesn't think he truly prepared for Floyd in the sense that he came to outbox him and didn't seem to have a plan B as far as Nacho was concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I saw this before the fight, that Canelo's patience will cost. I didn't know that he would be exceedingly patient, but Floyd makes you do that. He makes you put your gloves in your pocket. And the pressure factor really wasn't there. It seemed he tried the pressure once. And as you said, his offense was blunted. And then he started just to pose and look, and Floyd started to pick him apart. And as you said, Canelo got frustrated, and he shouldered, like shoulder butt Floyd. He hit him low on purpose one good time. I mean, a couple times, actually. And, you know, he showed his frustration. And to be honest, for that many fights he showed that Canelo has, he showed a level of immaturity, to be honest.
Yeah, all of a sudden, even though he has 44 fights, he all of a sudden looked like a 23-year-old kid in the ring.
Exactly. A 23-year-old fighting a very seasoned veteran. And,
exactly.
Yeah, and the fact that you could see that he didn't have that in him. And that's what I thought. I didn't think he would get thoroughly dominated like this. I thought he would give Floyd some rough moments, and that didn't happen. I actually thought that he would have a different strategy than to sit and be patient like he always is, fighting other people.
Either way, it was funny because he constantly referenced the Cotto fight. And again, Cotto lost a wide decision, so that was a great reference for him, someone who lost 118 to 110 across the board. But he referenced the Cotto fight, and I know what he saw in the Cotto fight. He saw that Miguel was able to touch Floyd a couple times, but it looks and Canelo, better than you or I or Butch, you should know this. It's so much different in the ring than when you're watching it, watching video or watching it on TV. And what Cotto was able to do was touch Floyd. He busted Floyd's nose. People always make a big deal that he had Floyd's nose bleeding. He did it with a counter jab. Floyd would throw his right. Cotto would dip the right and throw a jab. And you know what? And that's how he busted Floyd up. But as far as power punches, if you really watch the fight, even when he had Floyd in the corner, he landed a couple, but he didn't land significant. He didn't land a significant amount of power punches. Floyd still dominated Cotto when Cotto pressed the gas. Cotto fights better off the back foot than Alvarez. Alvarez is younger, quicker. Alvarez is a pretty good counterpuncher. Where Alvarez made his mistake was saying, hey, you know what, I can make him lead and I can counterpunch off his mistakes. He tried, and he was quick. But, Zito, I remember it was like the first or second round when Canelo went to counter a low Floyd jab with a right, and that right came real fast, and Floyd was out of there. and you screamed, man, he's cat-like quick. And so that instantly put a hole in his counter-punching strategy. From that point on, he was befuddled.
Hey guys, we're joined by Sleepy Hollow resident Dr. Chris Panarella.
Hey, I finally woke up, guys. I woke up. I predicted that Mayweather fight to go that way because Canelo is very slow, and his right hand is not sharp. It's a push right hand. It's not even a good one. And I knew he was going to flop against Mayweather. I didn't have any confidence in him at all, of even banging him around. I mean, he's had all hand-picked opponents practically all his career, and he never ran into a guy like Mayweather who could. He's an expert boxer, as speedy and somebody, you know. So it didn't surprise me at all. But what did surprise me was the fight before that. I thought Matisse would do a little better.
I had a feeling Garcia was going to win that fight.
Well, you know what? I didn't realize Matisse hesitates too much, doesn't use his right hand enough, doesn't throw the left hook behind the right hand. I mean,
plus
there were a couple of times
jabbing.
When
he stopped jabbing as well a lot.
Sometimes you could jab your way in and throw the right hand behind a jab, or you could throw the right and then throw the left hook right behind it, and you catch a guy a lot of times. But he just didn't look right. He wasn't getting off. And when he did hit Garcia, it knocked his mouthpiece out across the ring. Garcia took that punch like it was nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be honest, Matisse, the fight turned a lot different after Matisse's eye swole.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Matisse had Garcia almost out on his feet in the 11th round as well, though.
Right, he stung him good there, yeah, I remember that.
Of really clean shots, but he got rocked pretty bad like two times in that fight as well and had to hold to survive.
You know what, when your eye closes, you can't see. It's pretty damn hard to fight. And you don't feel confident about throwing your right hand because you want to keep protecting your eye. And not
to mention Garcia's best punch is his left hook. And
absolutely.
That's where he couldn't see that left hook coming at all.
Yeah, that was it. When I saw that eye pop up, I said, you know what, Garcia's going to outsmart him now. He's just going to outbox him now.
Dr. Chris, it was revealed that Matisse ended up with a partial fracture of his orbital bone. That's why it swelled up so fast,
mm-hmm. You know what? And the guy did a good job of keeping it down. The corner
did
a good job.
Yeah.
But I saw some great fighters go down with swelling. One of them was rolled in against Marvin Hagler.
Yeah.
Yacilio against Robinson. When one eye closes, you're only half the fighter. You have to make compensations, and you'll usually lose the fight if you get a swollen eye. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Graziano-Zale fight, when Graziano's his right eye was closed, the corner man actually took a punch. They used to fire these things on their finger. They were punches. You could punch a hole in the ball and make it bleed. You could strike where you want to hit it and bleed it. You could bleed it, and they did it to Graziano-Zale fight and relieved the pressure right away. And it was on the bottom where didn't make any difference, but, boxing was different in those days.
Let me ask you, Dr. Chris. In those days, a lot of times, the eye would swell up, the guy couldn't see, and through the history of boxing, a guy does better, actually, if he breaks one of his hands and fights with one arm. A guy tends to do better with one arm than one eye, unless you're Joe Frazier, of course. But with that being said, in those days, Dr. Chris, when the eye would swell, like you said, they would cut the eye underneath the eye, so the blood would flow
underneath.
The eye would just flow down.
Right,
why has that practice been stopped?
Well, you know what? It got real big publicity after the Graziano-Zale fight, and then they put a big stop on that. Just told all the trainers, if you're caught with that, we're going to disqualify your fighter. If you do that, we're going to disqualify your fighter. New York controlled boxing, and that guy was a real czar, that guy that was head of the New York Boxing Commission. And he just flat out told him, you ever do that again, I'll bar you for 5 years and I'll bar your fighter for, you know. And that was about it. That stopped it. But it was nothing more than a punch, just a little punch. They used to wear it on a ring and punch it, and you couldn't even feel it.
Right, but just let the eye bleed.
And let the eye bleed,
you weren't scarred up. So I was always, you know, it's funny because I watched these fights, and it, you know, I'm a little younger than you, and I remember because we watched so much old footage. But for us, it was the first Rocky when he's cutting me, Mick. You know, to relieve the swelling. And it always made me wonder how come fighters or trainers don't do that anymore, because it doesn't leave a scar. The punch doesn't leave a significant scar. And because of the blood leaks, it instantly relieves the swelling. You can see in the eye again. So I always wondered why that practice was stopped.
Well, they stepped in and just said it was very illegal. And, you know, so now they you saw the Tiberi Tony fight when they cut the gloves. You know, that was what they resorted to now. And when Henry Cooper stung Ali and had him out, Angelo Dundee cut the gloves and gave Ali enough time to recover. But little tricks here and there, but they know that, you know, you went back to your corner without a cut and you come out with one, they know what you did. You know?
Right.
And the boxing commissioner of New York was brutal because he would bar you. He gave Graziano, he barred Graziano for a long time when he found out that he was, he punched the military officer and he was AWOL and he was fighting. And then when they found out, they barred him. And he didn't fight the third jail fight for quite a while. When he did, he wasn't the same guy. But he was a tough guy. He would, if you didn't report a bribe, if somebody tried to bribe you, even a minimal bribe, like just you don't even know if the guy's serious. If you don't report it, he'd bar you. He'd stop the fight and bar you. He did that a couple of times. I mean, he was always in the middle of things. He never let anything go. Not like the NFL and these guys. They let everything go, but. Not that guy. He was brutal. So he stopped that real quick. He said it's not fair. It's not, you know, it's inhuman. He said, they would use that word. He said it's not human to intentionally.
That's what I would think. That he would think it's not humane. I would think that would be the reason.
I was waiting for them to punch Basilio's eye when he fought Robinson. Mm-hmm. You remember how Robinson closed his eye early? They couldn't see, but it went 15 rounds.
Yep.
I was waiting to see him do it then, and they didn't do it. Didn't do it. Because Robinson just outboxed Basilio all the way, and Basilio hung in there. Now, today, that fight would have been stopped much earlier. They would have stopped it. But I said, here's the ideal eye to puncture. Right now, boom, pop it in there and bring Basilio back. But now they didn't do it. He went the whole 15 rounds with a swollen eye. Like I say, New York was, you know, he was a...
Yeah, we just had a technical flop here. I'll get Chris right back on.
Oh, okay, no problem. Zito, what do you think is next for Canelo now that he's coming off this loss? Obviously, he's 23. It was a win-win proposition for him. Received the highest payday in his life, $5 million, and he lost to the best boxer of the generation. So, even though he didn't perform great, he only lost to Floyd Mayweather. So where does he go from here? What's next for Canelo?
Well, Canelo still has he's a draw. And so I would expect him to go seek another draw. And right about now, the biggest draw in his weight class with him will probably be a Miguel Cotto, depending on how Miguel Cotto does against Delvin Rodriguez.
And it also depends on whether Top Rank and Golden Boy would be willing to make that deal. Do you see Golden Boy steering him maybe towards Carlos Molina to get him another title? That's a fight Molina has said he's wanted, as well as Arislande Lara. Of course, Molina's calling for Mayweather. He's, you know, obviously calling for everybody, which he should. But do you see Golden Boy steering him towards Molina since they have, you know, the services of both?
Molina... He has the same problem, and I understand they might be under different promotions, but Molina has the same problem and the opposite style as Guillermo Rigondeaux. They're in the ring, to the casual fan who boxing tries to gear a little more towards, they're not the most exciting fighters.
Right,
I mean,
right.
to me, I appreciate their styles to the fullest. But
oh my God, Rigondeaux is one of my favorite boxers today.
Absolutely, and Molina, he's just not that much of a draw. And the Ish Smith fight didn't prove any different. It may have served him worse.
And on top of that, Molina actually didn't look good for Molina in that fight.
No, and it was a sloppy fight. I mean, to be honest, it was a sloppy fight that I thought Molina barely edged out. It's just, as far as Molina goes, I just don't see the marketability in that.
It's not an easy fight for Canelo. When you talk about resumes, Zito, Dr. Chris, at 154, Dr. Chris was saying that Canelo's resume was thin. It was, hand-picked fighters. When you talk about resumes at 154, point blank, the new IBF champion, Carlos Molina, had the best resume at 154. He's fought Chavez Jr. to a draw and to a loss. A lot of people thought he won both fights. He fought Arislande Lora to a draw. Most people thought he won a fight. He beat James Kirkland, and they disqualified him. He beat Kermit Cintron. They called it a draw. I mean, this guy, and now he's beating Ish Smith. That's six guys within the top 10 that Carlos Molina has fought and, by most people's accounts, has defeated.
And that's the thing. He's defeating them with a very, very unimpressive style by sight. I mean, as I say, and I have to keep saying to the casual fan, because, I mean, boxing appreciators, they're going to, they can appreciate that style. They can love that type of style. I mean, Molina, he's not anything near flashy, but he's very, very consistent.
He's a guy who doesn't have great speed, has no power, but stays in your face, is consistent, and knows how to avoid the big shots.
And as I say, physically is nothing special. Physically. But, I mean, his level of skill is something to be appreciated. I mean, he does it ugly. He does it ugly, but it's effective.
And he does it very effective.
And he does
it. Totally agree.
That's
hey, guys, we're joined by the new Ray Robinson.
Hey, baby.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
Well. What did you think of Floyd Mayweather's performance last week?
I thought he did his job. I thought that he did what he normally do. He go in there and handle business. I thought he boxed. When I order a fight from Floyd, I don't expect him to try to go knock the guy out and do all that. I expect him to fight smart, and that's what I ordered. I ordered to be a boxing lesson, a clinic. And a lot of people thought that Floyd was going to run, and Floyd did the opposite. He didn't run. He took it to Canelo in the beginning. So, I love smart fighters. I love a smart man that can hit and not get hit. And,
right.
I can appreciate that, the signs of it.
I was just saying, Zito and I were just talking about, like, for instance, Guillermo Rigondeaux, who to me is one of my favorites today. And he's a guy who his own promoter bad mouths. So.
Hey, Chris, do you have any questions for Ray? I mean, he just finished up a great deal down there at the Carpenter Center in Delaware.
Big TKO over Ray Nall, who was carrying a lot of momentum into the fight.
Yep. I believe I got on the radio with you guys last time, and we talked right before that fight. And I just, I stuck to my guns with me just staying in shape and me learning from my last fight. And I feel like, my speed got better, to my power, to just, I think that all paid off.
Now, Ray, Nall was a guy that was getting a lot of hype, even from ESPN Friday Night Fights. And one of the first articles I read after you defeated him was that, you derailed him because he was the guy on the tracks. How did you get the TKO? How did you set it up? And when did you know it was going to happen?
I never looked for the knockout. I knew he was coming off a big win against Ronald Cruz, so I just felt like, you know, he was a tad bit cocky, and it's so funny because normally when I talk to one of the writers, they say that's the last thing Reynard is cocky and all that. So by him being cocky, so I wasn't sure if he was taking me lightly or whatever the case was, but I knew what I had to do is handle my business from just staying in shape and learning how to adapt to his style. He's a very awkward fighter, and from the first round, I had to learn how to adapt, and I listened to my corner, and that was the main key, and we got the job done. And I did everything behind a jab. I thought that he thought I was going to run too, and he thought I was going to outbox, and I think that I kind of let everyone know I can fight different styles. I don't have one style. My last fight, y'all see me, you know, I outboxed a guy that kept coming. That was the Morales kid, I believe.
Right.
And I outboxed him and come back to my jab. And I feel like I did what I was supposed to do. I outboxed a shorter fighter. So, like, this fight, you know, I can change up my plans. I know this guy is supposed to be a knockout artist. And I'm not too sure if everybody had me. And, you know, that comes with, you know, records and all that. I'm not sure if everyone had me that was going to win that fight and all that. But me going in there confident and knew what I had to do,
you were a dog going into the fight. You were the dog. He was favored.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He was favored. I mean, it was considered a mild upset. I mean, you were expected, you know, according to what was out there, you were expected to be competitive. It was expected to be a good test. But they figured this was just going to be another, you know, win for him. They really did.
I really felt like I was going to be another stepping stone. And, you know, it looked good on his record that he beat me. And I just had a different plan, mission right now. And, I'm really making a sacrifice in my life with the whole me eating right. And I think we talked about that, and I believe you actually talked about Bernard Hopkins and Floyd Mayweather, how they take a step back at life and just take a chance. And right now I'm taking my chance. I'm living right. I'm eating right. I'm staying in shape. I walk around only a couple pounds over my weight, so if I ever get that phone call, I'm ready.
Well, one of the things you also said, too, was that, you know, as you were maturing in the game, you were learning to punch harder. Was that Ray Na knockout kind of confirmation of that, it is coming together?
I think each fight I learned from, I even learned from this fight, although it was a 7-round knockout. I'm learning how to sit down on my punches right. I'm not, you know, panicking because I get hit. I got to hit right back. So, you kind of do get seasoned. The more you fight, you get seasoned as a fighter. And, you know, and trust me, like, I appreciate Bob. Me staying in shape and living how I'm living, I feel like it's helping me out.
Hey Ray, I think Chris has a couple questions for you.
Yeah. I was saying how much you can learn just from one fight. Sometimes it can turn your whole career around. I was saying that Mike Tyson, when he sparred, they filmed every single sparring session.
Uh-huh.
And then played it back to him at the end of the session. And because, you know, he was living at Gus and Kevin Rooney was living there. And they would do this. And he learned so quickly. I mean, he just, you know, I couldn't believe how fast he matured. And I'm wondering, do you guys today have access to a video? Do you show your sparring sessions or do you just show your fights?
I know when I was in Michigan, we used to do that. When I went to college in Marquette, Michigan, with Al Mitchell and them, they sat me down and we had to look at our sparring sessions. Right now, unfortunately, I don't do that now. I think it's a great idea to do that. I do sit down and look at my fights, and I don't like my own worst hit. I mean, when I make a mistake, it irritates me so bad. So I make me hit the gym even harder. And that's one thing is I seen that I feel like the Morales fight, that's when, you know, I was a little heavy and I crashed down. I didn't like the way I did that. I thought I did okay, but I didn't like it. It's something about that fight I feel like I could have done better. I could have been fast. I could have been smarter.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like in the later rounds, I got, you know, my legs didn't, you know, stand up like I wanted to be. Like, so it's just, I went back to the drawing board. And I said, I'm not gaining too much weight. And I felt like I was a different man this fight. I mean, from just eating right, living right, going to bed at a certain time, I'm sacrificing, you know, this, you know, my life to sacrifice, you know, a good life in the future, and that's me fighting and not having to worry anymore. So I'm willing to take sacrifice a good 3 to 4 years of absolutely hard work, no excuses, bust my butt and do what I have to do, and see where I can, and see what happens. And at the end of the day, if, you know, it works out, I can say I earned it. I did what I was supposed to do. I sacrificed, and it all paid off. And if not, it's like, listen, I still tried it, and I can sleep at night and say I did my best.
Do you hold a full time job, or do you? How do you make your living? I mean, go ahead.
I just full-time I own my own gym now, and I opened up my own gym. I say almost a year ago, a couple months ago. So that's another reason why I'm staying in shape, too. So I'm constantly around boxing. I'm constantly around working out. Mm-hmm. I got a partner behind me. Her name is Ashley. She's my strength and conditioning. And she knows her job when it comes to, you know, eating right, living right, and staying in shape. So me just having certain people around me and the right people to keep me on track, because, you know, you always want to fall off track. You always want to go with the wrong crowd or do this and do that. But if you got certain people around you, you know, it helps you out. So I just feel like I got the right people in my life at the right time.
That's important, no question about it. You say you feel as though you're punching harder now. What do you attribute that to? Did you change any method? Is it your right hand or your left hook that's caught? Getting better. What is it?
I feel like it's coming from both. I'm sitting down more. I'm, you know, I'm working better on my. I'm working on my legs. You know, I'm really concentrating on my body. It to be hard. You know, to.
Okay.
I don't gotta push down to weight. I mean, I don't get weak to lose weight like this. So if I get a phone call tomorrow, I don't have to lose that much weight. I don't get on a diet anymore. This is my. This is how I live.
You know, I had a great trainer. He's a very smart man. And I did not know how to throw a left hook when he took me over. In 6 months, I developed a pretty good knockout punch with my left hook, all from weight transfer, from getting on my left foot and spinning and holding that hook back till the last second. And he had me snapping my shoulders along with everything else and transferring my weight. And I knocked a few guys out with just one or two left hooks in the amateurs. I mean, and I didn't have that ability 6 months prior to that. And he also helped me with my right hand, you know, and he could explain to you how you could get more power into your punches. And sometimes a good trainer can make you a better puncher. I didn't know, you know, if that was the case.
Well,
I didn't know if that was the case here.
Well, obviously, I'm not with Moses anymore. Moses was my trainer for the Morales fight. But it don't, you know, Moses still came to my camp for Raynar and helped me out and showed me things. But both he did teach me how to, you know, roll with punches and sit down a little bit more. So definitely just get from different people. Absolutely. I'm like a sponge when it comes to boxing. I'm willing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think becoming a man, I'm getting my little man strength. So.
Hey!
Right.
Yes.
Not to switch gears a little bit, and I don't want you to give any trade secrets away, but what styles give you the most trouble, I would say? Are they the guys that come in with the rock-solid chins rushing in, the pressure guys, or are they the long guys who can box with you, can stay on the outside, I could say?
Honestly, right now, this is where the amateur comes in at. It's just that you got to learn how to adapt. And I feel like that's what I know how to do, because I fought in different countries. And you fighting out there and fighting the U.S. championships and golden gloves, you fighting so many different styles. So I feel like I've seen every style. So nothing's going to shake me up. You know, I don't need to wait till I get back to the corner. It's like, wait, why you keep getting hit with the right hand? Just stop going that way. Like, it's just that simple. So I just got to learn how to adapt. And so I feel like I showed my... I believe I knocked out Donnell Giles. He was a great boxer. Him and Hank went to a draw, and he was an awesome boxer. And then obviously I just beat Morales as a guy to keep coming. So I feel like you know, it doesn't matter. I just got to, it could be a boxer or a puncher. I just got to learn how to adapt and switch gears when I have to.
Right. Let me ask you this. With you, you know, you're on a win streak now, and you just defeated a guy that a lot of people thought was a comer. You're obviously, and I haven't checked the rankings recently, but you're obviously getting closer towards the top 10. Is there anybody now you're looking for logically, you know, someone logically on your radar?
Right now I would love to fight any of these names, Paulo Malignaggi to Khan, to even Devin. Like, whoever want to give me a shot. Everyone knows how hard it is to make it in the pro business. So I just feel like these guys, you know, I feel like I have proven myself. I just feel like everyone had high hopes for Reynard, and this guy's obviously the knockout artist, and I wound up, you know, I feel like I just showed a whole different style, and I made a statement. I told you guys I was something I wanted since I was 8 years old, and he was just another speed bump in my road in my head. So, and I paved over that. So I'm willing to, you know, I love to fight Amir Khan. I absolutely would love it. Like, I would go to him to fight Amir. I'll fight him in his grandma's backyard. We can set it up and have barbecue after. It doesn't matter. So I'll fight Amir Khan. I'll fight Devin Alexander. Even I know he had me go down there. It doesn't matter. I just feel like I have made my statements. I've been in the game for a while now, and I would love to fight Devin Alexander or Amir Khan. I really want Amir Khan. I think we both have good styles. I think Amir Khan is a great boxer, but I have speed too. I think that's something the fans would love to see. I would love to fight Amir Khan.
I'll tell you, if I had a choice, I'd stay away from Alexander. He's got a tough style. That's a brutal style of fighting.
But if you look at my record, you look at my record, but I don't run from the one. If he got the world title and he's the man to beat, and he got that world title, that's something I've been wanting since I was 8 years old. I'm willing to go fight him for that.
But you know what, I don't know if Ray will agree with me, but I was there at the Morales fight, and there were times in that fight where Ray reminded me a little bit of Devin Alexander himself, that same type of style.
Oh, really?
Yes.
He's got an extremely difficult style to solve. That guy would drive me crazy.
I feel like I hear a lot of, and it's so funny that he said that. I feel like a lot of fighters think that about me, you know. He looked like he had a simple style, but when you actually get in there, you know, it's a whole different ball game. Things look different. He moves a certain way. And, you know, I just, you know, once your dream knock on the door and you can fight for a world title, and that's something I've been wanting since I was 8 years old, especially the life I grew up in. I'm willing to take the opportunity.
Doesn't matter who has it, huh? Doesn't matter.
You gotta go with what they give you. You know, you gotta jump at something. Yeah, you
gotta
can't roll, turn anything
as
down.
They say, you gotta roll with the punches.
Alexander reminded me so much of the guy, the lightweight, the left hander. I can't think of his name now. I watched him fight 1,000 times. He was from Virginia. The small left-hander, he was lightweight champion. He gave
Two-Sharp's not from Virginia.
He's
what's
from
his name? Mark Johnson?
No, he was famous fighter, great.
Oh, you're talking
small
about Sweet P. Whitaker, Pinnell Whitaker.
Sweet P. Yeah, Alexander, he reminds me of Sweet P.
Remind me of Sweet P.
Sweet P drove everybody nuts. He was unbelievable. He had so damn much talent, that kid. He would drive it crazy fighting him. And that's what Alexander reminds me of. This got a similar style, a little bigger, that's all. But, Khan, you can reach in on it.
If you hit Khan, it'd be a problem.
Yeah, man, I would love to fight Khan. I think
I
a lot of people got hope
for
him.
I bet you would. You know what? I'm going to say something. I tell you a fight that could be extremely feasible at this point, because he's coming off of consecutive losses, and because at this point his management would look to rebuild his name, I could see them choosing someone like Mr. New as someone who's, you know what, this guy has a little bit of name recognition, and you know what, our guy should be able to beat this guy, Andre Berto. Andre, I would not be surprised if, because right now you're still not on that radar yet. I could see them saying,
mm-hmm.
hey, this guy has a little name cachet. He went 10 hard, good rounds with Sean Porter. This would be a good rebuilding fight for you. I could see them saying that
yeah.
and not really thinking, not really knowing what they're getting into.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's ready to be hacked. Berto, one more loss, he's done.
Yeah, but
what
they're going to do now is they're going to take a perceived drop in competition. They're not going to fight a top 10 guy, right?
Right,
so,
you're right.
They're going to drop back.
They're going to have to.
They're going to fall back a little bit, but they can only go so far. So they're going to have to go guys in that next level of the top 15,
mm-hmm.
top 20 guys. That's what they're going to be looking for. And then they're going to be looking for guys with name, cred, guys with a little bit of, you know, who don't perceive as dangerous, but as tough, somebody, you know, go some rounds with. A guy who went 10 hard with Sean Porter, but doesn't have an extremely high knockout percentage, perceived as a safe
mm-hmm.
fight. I could completely, like, you know, just knowing the boxing game, that's how management thinks. That's how guys like the new Ray Robinson all of a sudden get that fight, and they make it. They make big because they got that opportunity. Amir Khan, there's no way Amir Khan would look your way. There's just no way.
Yeah.
Too much risk, too little reward. Andre Berto at this point, Andre Berto, his management is looking for you. I'm serious. They're not looking for you. They're looking for your resume. They're not looking for you now.
Yeah.
What do you think of Eddie Cherry, guy?
When Berto had his first fight, he weighed 156 pounds. He came on the scene as a middleweight, and they told him that. You said you'll never make it as a middleweight. You're going to have to go down to welter. And right in his youth, he had to take all that muscle off and drop down to a welter. And I think his stamina is suspect now. I don't think he's got the stamina at 47. And if that's the weight you guys agree at, let's say you did fight him, he could be very easily beat at 47.
That's the kind of fight management makes right now, man. That's the kind of fight that management makes right now.
Yeah.
Berto's management is looking for that type of fighter, somebody who has a little bit of name cachet, somebody somewhat proven, but somebody they don't perceive as dangerous. Ray doesn't have a 90% knockout ratio. So it's like, oh, you know what, this guy is, you know, he's kind of young, he's
mm-hmm.
fresh. That's how it happens. That's just how it happens.
I don't think Berto's camp wants anybody who can box at this moment, who can actually touch on Berto and avoid his shot.
Yeah, you know what?
They might be looking at somebody.
Ray's amateur pedigree might cancel him out.
yeah, and I think they might be looking at somebody like a Kermit Cintron with a big name but has a trail of losses behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's done. Cintron's done.
You mean a trail of draws behind him? Because I could think of three draws that were clear losses for Kermit Cintron.
Kermit Cintron, he's had it. He was a big welterweight, tall welterweight. Now he's fighting at a heavier weight. He just doesn't have it at that weight. I watched him about a month ago. He looked terrible.
I honestly think Kermit Cintron had fought one of Carlos Molina's like training partners. Except this guy only had 11 fights with, like, 3 knockouts. And it was a draw, but this guy basically, you know, beat Kermit Cintron over the ring. And so what happens is, again, that guy was 11-0 with, like, 3 knockouts. He gets a shot at Cintron. Why? Because they perceive him as a safe fight. He's rebuilding. And what it ends up being is a crossroads fight because you got one guy coming and one guy going. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ray gets that type of call because –
The top guys, nah, man, nah, not right now.
Well,
Ray,
have your manager call Bob Berto's people, see if something could be done.
Yeah,
it's worth a try.
That's why I'm staying in shape to, you know, for the opportunity.
Berto, Selchuk, Iden, all these big names coming off of losses. Berto, Selchuk, Iden, all these big names coming off of losses.
They're looking for what they think. This is how we've all watched the boxing game long enough to know that's what happens. They have to perceive you as being a level below them to give you that shot. If they perceive you as dangerous, then it's tough to get that shot to a certain extent. You know what I mean? Like, your resume, in a sense, is perfect. It's perfect. You've got a tough loss, a disputed loss. Perfect resume. Shows you go 10 rounds. You don't have the hugest knockout. You're not George Foreman with your punches.
Yeah.
I just, man, it's going to happen for you. It's the wrong guy. Somebody's going to call you and not realize they called the wrong guy. That's what's going to happen, I'm telling you.
Well, that's awesome.
How do you reach another manager today? I mean, do you guys talk amongst each other?
Well, I let my Chambers Management is a great team I have, David Tiberius, and I really let them hand do the whole calling other managers and all that. And I think so far they did a great job with moving me and giving me opportunities to fight for different belts. Absolutely.
Right. You know what? They could also put you in the ring with like another guy they think is a comer, or another undefeated type of prospect guy. That, you know what I mean? I could like it's coming soon, Ray. I really see it. Just because that Reynaud victory, in the scope of things, is a big victory for you. It's not going to be your biggest, but it's a big victory at this point. And because of the hype and momentum he was getting, it does put you in position for much much more significant things.
Well, maybe it'll happen, guys. Maybe we'll be talking about that within a year.
Absolutely.
That's great.
I appreciate it.
Well, Ray,
we
want to thank you for
dialing.
It's always a pleasure to have you on, and it's always so informative. But before you go, I know you know Danny Garcia well. You want to give us an update on what you thought of that fight?
Oh, yeah.
That's one guy that he definitely know how to win, man. I like Danny Garcia. He's from Philly. I take my hat off to him. I really did. I really think he did a great job. He did what he's supposed to do. You know, he was the underdog. And, you know, he don't let that stuff get to him. He know what type of work he's putting in that gym. He know what he's doing. He's doing something right, him and his dad. And I wish him the best. And I love his performance. He did a great job.
With that being said, Ray, if Danny Garcia's team called you to ask you to welcome him to the welterweight division, would you do it, or is there too much friendship there?
Oh, No, absolutely. Danny's a good friend. He's a great friend, but come on, this is a good friend. He's a good friend, but I've been wanting this since I was 8, too, so.
Yo, Ray said, come on, man. I'm going for it. Ray responded like I was crazy for asking the question. What? That's the new.
How do you think Garcia will do as a welterweight?
I don't know. He's, you know, he.
That's a big move.
It is, you know, and a lot of people see it's only 7 pounds, but, you know, these guys up here, you know, it's a whole different ball game, you know. But I guess we'll see. Time will tell, right?
What weight did you fight Sean Porter at? Was that a welterweight or was that a little bit above?
Above. I went up from 140 and up shot right up to 50 something.
I thought so. Because I know he wasn't fighting welterweight at the time you fought him, so you weren't even fighting in your weight class. Yeah. So.
Well, Ray, we want to thank you again for being on with us tonight. It's always informative. You're always a great guy, a great guest to have, and we appreciate it. We'll be pulling for you for a super fight to come up, and if there's anything we can do, you let us know when it's coming up, and we will definitely get it on the air.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it, and thanks for always asking.
All the news! Take care of that family.
Thanks, Greg.
That's funny.
I will.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, we had a problem with passing of a tremendous fighter. I know you've got some background on that. Maybe you can bring us up on Ken Norton's passing about his style. And
I saw the Ken Norton Ali fight in Yankee Stadium. I was sitting when we bought our way in. We were up in the ozone layer. And for $20, we moved down to the infield. And he had the style to drive Ali crazy, and he did. He had Ali's. I mean, he looked great against Ali, but George Foreman damn near killed him. I mean, you know, he had a certain style to give one type fighter a battle, and then he didn't have, you know. He did. Another heavyweight could come along and knock him silly. He didn't have a lot of confidence in himself. I know a lot of fighters. I talked to a lot of fighters. Carmen Graziano brought Jerry Cooney over to spar with him, and said that he thought Cooney could beat him, and he did. He did beat him, and I think what knocked him out in the second round.
Oh yeah.
But he had sparred with him earlier. But Ken Norton was a powerful man, had an awkward style, and he was strong. And when Ali laid on the ropes, he pounded the hell out of his body. He just beat on him. You could hear the punches from ringside. I mean, we were pretty close. He was thumping Ali. It's got to take its toll on you over 15 rounds, 12 rounds. It's got to take its toll on you. So, I mean, if I had to remember Ken Norton, I'm going to remember him fighting Ali, not George Foreman, guys like that, because he didn't do well against certain type fighters.
Guys that could back him up, you know, guys that could back him up usually dominated him, actually.
Yeah. He had to be moving into you, pounding on you. He wasn't a backup fighter, you're right.
He's obviously most famously, you know, known for breaking Ali's jaw and handing Ali his second defeat. I look at Ken Norton as the golden age Juan Manuel Marquez. He fought the Icon three times, and he actually walked away with one decision, but he arguably beat the Icon three times. So.
When I saw the fight I saw at Yankee Stadium, Norton should have been declared the winner.
Exactly.
Norton should have been declared the winner. That particular night, the police were on strike. The New York Police Force was on strike. And they were all outside picketing the stadium. And everybody was selling marijuana in the stadium. They were going around selling marijuana like you sell Cokes in Philly, like you sell Coca-Cola. Christ, I didn't even get drunk from the marijuana. Everybody around me was smoking it. And it was quite a night. In front of me was Larry Sanka, played fullback for the Larry Sanka.
Yeah.
And we were sitting right behind him. So... The priest was with Larry Sanka, and he says, I'm going to go down into the infield and get a real good close look at Ali. And Sanka says, you better not go down there. You better not go down there. The priest comes back screaming, somebody picked his pocket. Everybody was bumping into one another down there. There were no police there. And all the pickpockets had a field day. Red Smith, who had a ringside seat, who was a famous sports writer, said he's been attending athletic events for 50 years. It was the first time he ever got his pocket picked. It was quite a comical night. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I mean, we laughed all night long.
Hey,
Ali came in. He was at his best that night, being fooling around, you know? And he was so calm and relaxed, and he won the crowd over in a matter of seconds. Everything he would do, they would cheer five times louder than what they would if Norton did something good. And, you know, they kind of – I don't think
the judges were up to par that night. There's something wrong there because Norton probably won that fight by 4 or 5 rounds. And,
it seemed like what Ali tried to do is make everything seem like it was part of his script. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, even if he got hit, it was because he wanted to show that his chin was good. You know what I mean? And the crowd was completely won over by the antics, and it seemed like the judges were, too.
Yeah. Achilles was there.
Hey, little story. The priest that was there is Father Paul Sheeky. He was the chaplain for the Dolphins, and he's now the pastor emeritus here at St. Francis in Parish.
Oh, okay. He was furious that night. He got his pocket picked. Yeah, I mean, they had a field day. The pickpockets had a field day that night. And people were running around, get him. Well, there was no cops inside. And there had to be 15,000 people on the infield because they had the whole seats all the way around the infield. And the ring was about where the pitcher's mound would be. Let's put it that way. And then they... seats were all the way around, and but it wasn't. I don't think there was 20,000 people there that night. I don't think there was 20,000 people there because we, for $15 or $20, we moved down right where Sanka was sitting. Hell, that was. But they had some interesting fights that night. You know, prior to that, and that great big guy that they were predicting as one of the next heavyweight champions. He made a movie with Sylvester Stallone and there were three brothers. He was a wrestler. I'm trying to think of his name. Started with a C. C. He was a big guy, about 6'6", about 265. He fought earlier that night. He didn't look too good. You could see that night that he wasn't going anywhere.
Probably why we don't remember his name.
I'm trying to think of his name. Canalito. Lee Canalito.
Oh, yeah.
Lee Canalito. I mean, he was on that card. And what an evening. We got out. We went back to get our cars out of the parking lot. The parking lot closed at 12. Well, we went out to have something to eat after. We had to stay overnight in New York. I had dental patients scheduled the whole next day. All of us did. We had to cancel everything out. What a night. Never again. That's what I said. Never again will I come to Yankee Stadium and watch a fight.
Yeah. Ken Norton would never fight Joe Frazier because of their friendship. They never fought each other.
You know what?
Those,
that would have been an interesting fight because there would have been no separation there. I mean, I think Frazier would have beat him.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too.
I think Frazier would have gone in low and hit him with that hook. I don't think he could beat Frazier.
Frazier would have moved him backwards, and that would have been the difference.
Yeah, Frazier, when he dipped to his left and came up with that hook, you had to give him room, otherwise he'd kill you with that damn left hook. The only guy strong enough to push him down was Foreman. Foreman had the ideal style for Frazier. He just pushed him down.
Right.
And he was strong enough just to grab him and push him, hold him, and then back up and wait for a chance to throw an uppercut. And that's what the hell Foreman did.
What he also did was kept his arms out. So when Frazier would throw those hooks, they would hit his arms as opposed to getting to his face.
Right.
So even when they got to his face, they were just grazing his face because they had to go through around his arms and over his arms and through his arms first. I thought that was brilliant, too.
Yeah. It goes to show you what style.
And Mickey's doing his last dance.
All right, guys. Well, I'll see you next week.
All right, Chris. Thanks
a lot.
All right,
Frank. Take it easy.
All right, Z, you want to lead us out?
Sure do. I want to thank Ray Robinson, and good luck to him. I want to thank Dr. Chris Pennarello. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Ta?
What are you going to do with your Philadelphia Eagles? Give me a week to think about it. Next week I'll be on about the Eagles. I already lost 3 dinner bets. I bet.
You just lied.
I thought the Eagles were going to kill them. I bet three guys dinner they're going to go 3-0. I'm sick about that. All right, guys. Bye now.
Go ahead, Ty.
I don't think I could top that. That was the best closing ever. As soon as I hang up, I'm going to listen to that again. That is just the funniest thing ever to me. Obviously, it's been a great show. Somehow this show is starting to find a sense of comedy, which is funny. Again, thank you to the new Sugar Ray Robinson for coming on. We wish him the best in his career. We thank Dr. Chris for everything he provides, which is sometimes unexpected. Bob is our co-pilot. We'll see you guys next week.
Okay, well, we want to thank everybody that came in, and Ty, Zito, you always do a great job. Ray did a fantastic job, and Chris is always up for a good one. So we appreciate everything you guys do. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every week, every night of the week, in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, just simply just walk over, whisper into their ear, or just talk to them, say thank you, hello, anything. It really makes a day for the guys on the street. We also dedicate these programs in memory of Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Patrolman David Curtis, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, the Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Uniform Division, Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, Pennsylvania Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, and Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night.
Shema Israel, Ma Son Hashem, Nevorat Fet, Hakuig Again, Ma Yilma.
Shema Israel, Ma Shema Israel, Ma.
and proudly toast his noble fame, whose spirit and with mind aflame, saw Esham strength and length of days.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is responding to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Good night, Bob. We love you. We miss you.